Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us to our next episode. I think we are going closer to 100 episodes, so let's see. I have a special guest today, and I'll probably just first tell you guys why I invited him because we had amazing connection through one of the group where we met first time, and after that we organized meeting, and I had the best conversation ever, full of love and consciousness and dreams, and we talk about retreats, and it was such a beautiful connection that I decided to bring Jem. I told your name, bring Jem to my podcast because I think we can have absolutely amazing aligned conversation about conscious leadership, conscious communication, consciousness itself, and you're doing some amazing work in this world. And yeah, I just love how you're going for it, challenging yourself. And yeah, just creating. And you're definitely working in that right brain. I can see you're so creative and so full of love and support for people. So let's jump into that and welcome.
Oh, Alex, thank you so much. And thanks for the introduction. Thank you for inviting to have me on your show. It really warmed my heart. And I've had this in my calendar, and all through the week I'm looking at this and getting so excited, really, just to connect more with you and to talk with you. You know, our first conversation was just so beautiful and so from the heart, and so aligned, like you said. So yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, I was stalking you a little bit, so I saw that you're doing so much coaching. You're author, so you're writer. There's so much more in what you do, trainings, and I think you do also some corporate trainings. But I'm sure that this journey, especially in the coaching industry, takes us always in one direction when we realize, oh my gosh, like this is it, this is that sweet spot. So I will probably ask you first, like, how did you start it? How did you came up with this all coaching and writing books? So like how did you end up here? That will be my first question.
Yeah. I mean, look, we could, if we had hours and hours, we could fill in all the pieces of the puzzle. I'm 53 years old, so there's been enough years. I kind of feel like I'm halfway. I'm just going to call it and say halfway, right?
Yeah. I'm
I
sure
mean, I
you
don't.
are.
But so halfway through this beautiful, wonderful journey of existing. And so there are chapters that I look back that now all make sense, you know, to what I'm doing now. But when I was in them, I was just in them. I didn't know there was a bigger reason why I was traveling around the world working as a fire dancer or a tattooist or a kindergarten teacher in Taiwan or a motorcycle
What are
courier in London. Or I didn't know why I was living as a
Oh, wow.
punk in a squat in London. I didn't know why I was wandering barefoot around India for years with dreadlocks. And I didn't know why. I was just being in the moment and doing what I wanted to do. I was aware that I never wanted to follow the mainstream. I always knew that I was quite rebellious and even a little bit passionately anti-establishment when I was much younger. And I know that was a reaction to my father. I didn't want to be my dad, you know, that typical old father-son story or child-parent
Yeah.
story. So I've had a really, really colorful life and I've packed a lot into it. And then when I became a dad, in my early 30s, I was like, wow, I've got to support a family. I need to feed these kids and put a roof over their head. And I had no qualifications. I hadn't been in the same job for more than a year.
Yeah.
I was a muso, singer-songwriter, tattooist that had been traveling around the world. And so I got a job with a travel company. People in Australia, everyone in Australia knows Flight Centre. So I got a job with Flight Centre as a travel consultant, and I spent 8 years with them and quote unquote a successful 8 years because I went through the ranks of junior leadership into senior leadership and ended up with quite a large department that I was in charge of with a lot of employees, a lot of
Yeah.
zeros and numbers on the profit and loss statement, lots of responsibility. And what I loved about working for Flight Centre is one of the things I loved about working for them is that they invest a lot of resource in leadership development. So once you get into the leadership roles, there's a lot of leadership development. This is where I first started to learn and become curious in a formalized way about human behavior. This is where I started first learning about, you know, DISC and human behavioral styles and you know, neuro-linguistic programming and all this cool stuff, which had me fascinated. When I was in that senior leadership role, My leader, who I reported to, was the state manager, and she brought in an external coach for a weekend retreat. We used to go on retreat, leadership retreats, and we had this external coach come in. Joe Parnay, his name is. He's still around.
I know him, of course.
Yeah. So Joe came in to run an external weekend. This was back in 2012, so about 12 years ago. And I met this guy, Joe, and he was doing his thing. And to me, it was magic. I'm like, oh, you're a magician. What are you doing? How do you know all this stuff? This is amazing, you know? And I remember clearly that I said on one of the lunch breaks, I said, what do you do? And he said, this is what I do. I teach this stuff. And I was just enamored. And I knew then that that's what I wanted to do.
I love it.
And so I went home to my then wife and I said, one day I'm going to leave the corporate world and I'm going to study coaching and I'm going to become a coach, right? And she's like, oh, that's nice, honey. And the universe heard me.
Let's feed a family.
Yeah, the universe heard me, but didn't hear my timing. I thought I'd stay an extra year or so and get some more, leadership experience under my belt, etc. But the universe didn't listen to any kind of timing. It just went, oh, is that what you want? And next thing I know, I lost my job. It was also the time of my midlife. People call it a midlife crisis. For me, I saw it as a midlife opportunity, a midlife awakening, dare I say, a bit of a woo-woo word. But I lost my job, lost my marriage, lost my house, lost everything except for my two children. Well, that we went into week on, week off, 50-50 shared care. And that's when I really had to do a lot of soul searching and a lot of work on myself. But it's also when I went to the Coaching Institute and I took my any money that I had and I invested it in learning all of the stuff that I was so fascinated in. And I jumped in the deep end and started my coaching practice then. People said, you're crazy, you're building a house, you should go and get another corporate job or something. And I was like, nope. This is meant to be. I have to do this now. So yeah, that was 12 years ago. I started my coaching practice, and as you were saying, over the years, your niche appears in front of you, and it's like, it's what's showing up in front of you, and also what you feel called to and what you feel passionate about. So pretty quickly, it became leadership. So I've always called myself a leadership coach, and then over the years, I realized more and more that it's about communication and more conscious communication. So I wrote in COVID, I wrote my first book, The Art of Conscious Communication. And I had always been running retreats. That's a whole other story, to the Himalaya, to a village with a family that is my family from the 90s, my adopted family in the Himalayan mountains. And I've been running retreats there since 2013. So yeah. And then, the TEDx talks and the books and the other stuff that kind of comes with it all, that just happens as we go, and the online courses and, the standard kind of stuff. But I've just been, I mean, I love what I do. I really, really do. And I, thankfully, I'm pretty good at it, so I get great results and my clients are wonderful. And so, yeah, that's been the journey.
I love it. And I love that we basically met probably somewhere along the journey, because I was in Coaching Institute for a very long time. I also was on board of helping them with some of their clients, those students. And Joe Pena is, I can tell I did this with him as well. So it's,
Yeah, me too.
he
Yeah. And Joe
probably,
and I, he was my mentor. I saw him as a mentor for years after I left the Coaching Institute, and we've become friends over the years. So so
he's a
now we're
beautiful
friends.
soul. Yeah,
Yeah,
so that's amazing. We probably know a lot of people, so we can just now start to talk about
he
that. Like,
is.
let's keep up here. Just stay here for a while. So
Yeah.
it's a beautiful journey, but I really curious probably in that spot when you said that you became a leadership coach and you started to break through and you kind of realize what you love more and just started to be interested in that. So how do you came up with conscious, like what is consciousness means to you, or maybe what does that mean to you will be probably first question.
Yeah, I love it, because as I'm looking at you, Alex, I can see in big, massive letters behind you, conscious leadership.
Yes, that's
Yeah,
funny. I'm
and
just
you and
off of
I, we yes, we have a lot in common. For me, quite simply, to be more conscious of anything is just to be more aware of it. So the more conscious we are, the more aware we are. And so conscious leadership to me means being more aware as a leader. Being more aware of the bigger picture, being more aware of the people that you're in relationship with, being more aware of yourself and understanding more and more when are you getting in the way of the act of service, because leadership is an act of service, right? And so this is a journey. It's not like you just flick on a switch and then all of a sudden you're completely conscious. It's a ebbing and flowing, beautiful journey, moving in and out. And sometimes we forget and we get lost in the dream of being carried away with our thoughts and our emotions, and we're not very conscious. And then we have moments where we go, oh wow, and we become more conscious again of what we're doing and the impact that we're having or not. So conscious communication for me is being more aware of the communication, and communication itself comes from the Latin word communicatio, which is a sharing, and the verb communicare, which means to make common. So it's coming from that root word common, so community and common and communication, commonalities, so it's a togetherness. And so the more aware we are of the communication, the more aware we are of, again, the bigger picture. Where is the person at that I'm with? Where am I at? Where are we at? Where is the community at?
It's a pretty much really great deep connection when you if you can have that in communication when you are in with someone, right? And you can have that real understanding how the person feels. How am I feeling with this person? What is the vibe? I always said, I'm talking about vibe and energy, but it is true, right? Like we know, like when someone walks in the room, you already know, what I want to be around this person or I don't, right? So it's very strange. Like I have a gut, right? A gut always telling us, like, hey, I just really don't enjoy this person. What it is that actually that awareness, is that in me? Is that something that I should see in myself, or is just because we just don't not aligned, maybe? Or it's interesting. So I love that because I think, being aware, and especially when you are interacting with people, is such an important point in communication and actually healthy communication. So, okay, so let's dig deeper a little bit, because I know your journey probably wasn't just, roses and beautiful trees in the garden. So, if you can think about your journey, because I'm sure, quitting the corporate job and having stable, salary, that's the biggest challenge for a lot of people. Just creating or making that change, right? And a lot of changes came into your life probably same time, right? The relationship, your marriage, job, so everything in one. So I will probably be curious. Tell me about that, because that feels like it was big down for you, and same time you grew through that, or you thrive through that somehow. So what helped you? How did you manage to overcome the fear and challenges, and really say, you know what, I'm quitting, or I'm not here anymore. This is the decision. I'm not looking for another job. So yeah, tell me more about that, because I think that would be very helpful for people doing a change in their life.
I mean, specifically to that part of that hero's journey, I've been on several hero's journey, and for people who are not aware of that term, it's a very human, stereotypical human journey of, going out into the wilderness to seek the next version of yourself, or to find the treasure, or to find something that you're looking for, and getting lost in the wilderness, and going through the fear and the not knowing and the being unsure of even who you are or where you are, and then coming out the other side, a better version of yourself, and finding some sense of triumph, right? So that's the hero's journey. And I've been on that journey a few different times throughout this life. So this particular one, when I was lost in the wilderness, what that looked like was losing my job, first, and then starting the coaching journey. And we'd just built a house, and I was still clinging on to the hope that we could rescue the marriage. And so I hadn't given up on the house or the marriage yet, but I was so determined that the coaching journey was my new professional expression, my new path, my new vocation. And I was struggling financially, and I was, because I went from earning a lot of money in senior leadership, and then when I started at the Coaching Institute, I was a house cleaner down the coast. I was scrubbing toilets, and making coffees in the local cafe just to put food on the table, and it wasn't enough. And it was stressful. I would have many, many sleepless nights. I would wake up in the middle of the night, having, anxiety and sweating and worrying. And but I was so determined that this was my path. I just kept taking action, because I had heard and read, like they used to say it at the Coaching Institute, but I also had read it in books, and I knew from my life's experience that action is an antidote to being paralyzed with fear. And when we're overwhelmed, we do procrastination, right? But action's an antidote. So I would just get up every morning and I would go out into the community and I would get into networking groups, and I joined BNI and I would join this networking group and I would give away free workshops, and I would just keep showing up, keep showing up. And as I kept showing up and started to slowly grow my coaching business, it wasn't fast enough in terms of my debts. My bills were piling up and up and up. And I mean, this is quite a personal thing to share on a podcast, but
It is.
I don't mind. I got to the point of full overwhelm where I had a pile of bills in front of me that I hadn't opened because I knew I couldn't pay them. And I
Wow.
got to the point where I needed help, and then I realized that I had to sell the house that we'd just built. I couldn't afford the mortgage. And it was either go and get a job somewhere and move away from my path and try and keep the house, or sell the house to stay on my path. And that's what I did. I sold my house.
Wow, some big decisions. That's amazing. The trust, the trust in your probably intuition or trust in that path that this is the right path. I think that's amazing. That's showing why, like why you are successful, why you love it so much, because you knew it's this is the one, this is the thing. And that's awesome.
Look, I just knew. I knew. I mean, look, I didn't come from a traditional background of going to university and getting a job and working my way up. I left as soon as I finished high school, 18 years old. I was gone. I was as far away overseas as I could get. And then I had a very unconventional through my 20s. I was just, like I said before, adventuring around the world to really, really crazy places and
I
doing
remember,
crazy,
yeah,
crazy things.
India barefoot dreadlocks. I remember that one.
India barefoot dreadlocks,
I can
and
see it.
lots of different stuff. I mean, I remember a time in North Pakistan in 1998. So this is
Wow.
2 years before 9/11, and it was actually in 98. It was I happened I had no idea because I was off the grid. This was before I had an email address. 1998. There was no smartphones, and I was up in North Pakistan, just backpacking around on my own and going up into the northwestern frontier province, the tribal areas. I dressed like a local. I had a long beard. I kind of fit in, and just I got off the beaten track. I went up into the Kailash valleys, where there's beautiful tribal valleys where the people are descendants of Alexander the Great. They don't look Pakistani at all. And I was up in there, and these villages are just beneath the border with Afghanistan. And I had no idea, but when I was there, Osama bin Laden bombed the US embassy in Africa, and the United States tried to retaliate and kill him. And they were sending cruise missiles in to try and kill Osama bin Laden just down the mountains from me. I had no idea this was going on. And I wanted to walk up to see Afghanistan.
What an experience. Wow.
So I was walking up, and some of the village people I was staying with, they said, when you go past this village, the highest village up, the kids, they don't want you there. So be careful, because the kids will throw rocks at you. And I met this other English backpacker, and we decided to go up together. So we packed some food and some water, and we started trekking up the mountain. And sure enough, we go past this village, and these kids came with rocks, and they're throwing rocks at us. We had to hide from the dodge the rocks. Anyway, we got past there, and we walked up. It took us about, I think, 5 or 6 hours to get up to the pass, the top of the mountain pass. And there we were standing up, where we could look down into Afghanistan.
Wow.
And we sat up there and rolled a joint, and we were sitting there just going, wow, getting stoned and looking around Afghanistan and Pakistan, right? And then this Mujahideen guy, I kid you not, true story, this Mujahideen guy comes up with a Kalashnikov on a horse, riding his horse, and he comes up with his gun, and he's looking at us with this quizzical look on his face, like, what are you doing here? Right. He didn't speak any English, but he's just looking at us
Couldn't
going,
believe it. I
they do
probably never
this.
met anyone there.
Yeah, they just do this gesture with their hand. They just do this one gesture. If anyone can watch the YouTube clip, I'm going like
Yeah.
this, like you're changing a light bulb, right?
Yeah.
That gesture with the hand, which means, what are you doing? And then he pointed at us, and we were just like, oh, you know, we're just chilling out, just having a look, and blah, blah, blah. He points at us with his gun, and then he
No.
points back down the mountain, like, go back down where you came from.
Wow.
I was really stoned, and I'm like, yes, I'm sorry, dude. No worries, man. I'm going, we're going, we're going. And we walked all the way back down, you know.
I'm sorry, dude. I
But
have no
sorry,
idea what
dude.
to say.
Peace. Assalamu alaikum, you
Yeah.
know, like full respect. And he was a nice guy. He was just like, you're in the wrong place, guys. You don't want to hang around up here.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that story is just one of so many stories. Adventure stories that I was just into adventuring and cruising around and
Yeah.
you know, and I look back now and doing pretty crazy things. So the reason I share that is because when I had my midlife opportunity and everything fell apart, yes, there was the stress of having to feed my kids and not earning enough money and having to sell my house. But in terms of the courage piece of doing scary stuff or going into places unknown to me, I was pretty used to that.
Yeah,
You know,
you
I
have
know what it's like
training.
to just
Quite a good
feel the
training.
fear and do it anyway. I'm like, fuck it,
Yeah.
I'm doing it, you know. So it was probably a little bit easier for me than people who have had more of a conservative play it safe
Yeah,
trajectory.
absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So that's amazing. No, I love the crazy stories because not a lot of people took themselves on that kind of path, right? And trying different things. And I feel like when people don't do it early in their age, they do it later when they have the midlife opportunity,
Yeah.
because it's, you know, we are missing that, right? Because we all have a little adventurous part in us, and I believe that adventure part, when we connect to that, it's when we are growing and when we are exploring and when we are trying to find ourselves. So I think because of that society and pressure on how you should be, how you should study, how you should get a job, and the path for everyone, you know, created already. It's the same path. 50, 60, 70% people, I'm sure, can't be happy, right? Because there's
Yeah.
still a lot of people, they appreciate adventure and variety and, you know, something new all the time. So it's
Yeah.
interesting. And I love that you use that part of your life for, you know,
Yeah.
trying new things and challenge yourself. That's amazing. Definitely
Yeah.
you build up a lot of resilience. Now I can understand where your retreat coming, right? It's like, no, let's not do
Yeah.
normal retreat, let's go to Himalayas.
Yeah, that's right. And some I just realized, Alex, that I didn't properly answer your question because you asked me how did I get through that hard time, and I would like to share some practical applications, some practices to help people. So anyone listening and thinking, okay, well that's great, Jem, you've had this crazy life, but what can I actually take away from listening to this podcast that will help? And so some really simple daily habits that I formed that help. One, mindfulness meditation.
I love it.
Specifically mindfulness meditation. Now, there's transcendental meditation. There's, you know, listening
Yeah.
to, but mindfulness meditation is the practice of paying attention to the present moment, just observing the present moment, whatever you can observe, right? And you can do guided meditations. But I started a practice of mindfulness meditation, and at the start, it was a chore. It was like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed early and sit up and meditate. I'd rather just press snooze on my alarm, right? So it was a chore. But over time, it's now a joy. It's a pleasure for me because I get 20 minutes in the morning to switch off, not try and fix anything, build anything, create anything, not helping anyone, not packing school lunches, not doing, just sitting for 20 minutes and just
Yeah.
observing, right? So that's a key practice. A second one is affirmations, positive affirmations. And I used to think that positive affirmations were this kind of hippie woo-woo or Eastern mysticism thing, and that they
Yeah.
didn't do anything. I just used to think they didn't do anything, right? And then I came to understand what we now know through neuroscience and fMRI and imaging the brain and watching the way neuroplasticity occurs, and how we can have something to say about neuroplasticity and how we can actually form neural highways,
Yeah.
which are new beliefs. And at the same time, I was at the Coaching Institute and they're talking about limiting beliefs, unlimiting beliefs, etc. So I started rewiring my brain with morning affirmations. This has become habitual. I still do morning affirmations every morning. And then I found out later that the plasticity of our brain is much more active when we're in a heightened dopamine state. So then I started introducing a few years ago, at the end of my shower in the morning, I have full blast cold. And the full blast cold for 30 to 60 seconds. So the dopamine levels go up. And then I'm doing my affirmations because they're wiring, quote unquote, wiring much faster when the dopamine's up a bit. Yep. So there's the affirmations. And then there's the self-acceptance, self-okayness, I call it work. You know, just a practice of it, well, it's self-love, to be honest. You know, and this doesn't mean that I'm not ever going to try and grow or improve or get better. Of course, I'm hoping to always be growing and improving and developing and evolving. But it means that in this moment right now, remembering that I'm exactly who I'm supposed to be and that I'm enough and that I send myself love. You know, we're really good at sending love to the people we care about. We very rarely actually send love back to ourself. You
I
know,
agree.
Om Mani Padme Om is the ancient Sanskrit for this, self-compassion, love to thyself. And you know, and you can practice this. You can actually even just look in the mirror and say, hey, I love you. You're a good person. You know, go out there today and do your best. You know, some positive self-talk. Isn't it interesting? You talk about conscious communication and think about the quality of the words that you choose to use in your internal dialogue, especially if you're not happy with yourself, especially if you feel like you failed at something, or if you are not in a good frame of mind, like you get out of the shower in the morning and you're looking at yourself naked in the mirror and you're not feeling good about yourself. Listen to the quality of the words that you use because they are nothing short of abusive, right?
I agree,
Like,
yeah. Very normal.
can we swear on your podcast?
Oh yeah, feel
Right?
free.
Right. Okay. So you listen, when you're not happy with yourself, we say things to ourselves like, you fucking idiot. You're such a fucking dickhead. You're fucking useless. This is the internal dialogue. That is abusive. We don't talk to anyone else like that. Well, most of us don't. And I started to become aware of this going, whoa, 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 Jem, come on. You don't need to talk to yourself like that. I don't think there is ever a functional reason to be cruel. You can be firm and kind. You can aspire to raise the bar and show up and do better in a kind way. I don't think you ever need to be cruel to yourself or anyone else. So anyway, this was part of the practice was to become aware of your internal dialogue and improve it.
And I love it. I talk a lot about that, always reminding people you will never speak the way you speak to yourself, to your child. So why you would do that to yourself?
Yeah.
So it's that abusive behavior or communication to ourselves. It's actually very scary because it is wiring the brain, right? So it's
Yeah.
actually making you feel like you actually fucked up, right? So you
Yeah.
did something
Yeah.
wrong. But at the end, I love that when you say affirmations, like positive affirmations. I think we talk about it, how different it is when you wake up in the morning and you said, I'm tired, or when you said, oh, another amazing day in paradise. I'd love to use it because we are living in paradise, especially look in Australia, right? Like we have so many beautiful places. And when I'm going home as well, when I go back to Slovakia, I love it. I wake up in my brother's house in the garden, and I'm looking around. It's like, this is such a beautiful place. We are so lucky. Just having nature around, and nature is still free, right? What is absolutely amazing. So we can do it anytime we want, and still we wake up, oh, I'm tired another day. It's like, what do you want to die or what? Like, if it's okay, right? It's another day. And that's, I think there is a lot of things that habitual, right? Like abusive conversation. And I love that you mentioned that because it's such a simple thing, such a simple practice we can all do, right? Look around. Be present, notice what is around, notice the air. I always said, notice the air. Is that cold? How do you feel? How your body feels? Because we don't actually use body. Like we just don't even connect with body. We are in our head all the time, just doing, and thinking and improving and creating and getting better. It's like, hey, just have a break. I love that. Yeah, 20 minutes meditation, cold shower, rewind the
Affirmations.
brain, affirmations. Perfect.
And movement, exercise,
Yeah.
whatever that looks like for you,
Yeah.
but we need to move our bodies. We need stillness, which is the meditation, but we also need to move our bodies and exercise. So that's a big part of it. And like you just said, nature immersion. I spend a lot of time immersed in nature, whether it's just sitting on a surfboard in the ocean. I'm not a very good surfer, but that's not the point for me.
I don't know.
If I
Yeah.
catch the occasional wave, that's great. The point for me is that I'm sitting in the ocean, and there's no devices in the ocean, or, walking through the forest. I think reconnecting to nature is super important. Or if you live in the city, on your lunch break, when it's not raining, go and sit in the park under a tree and take your shoes off. Just take your shoes off. Just put your bare feet on the grass.
Yeah.
Simple things like this are massively healthy and important for us and our resilience.
Yeah, funny how people know about this, but just never do it, right? Like, oh, I don't want to look silly. I'm going to be, barefoot. People, we are funny. We are
We are.
funny creatures, right? So, yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at people, how they came, how they arrived to my retreat as well as last weekend, and it was so interesting. Everybody was cool, dress up. Everybody was very professional and really nice. And you can see how slowly people unleashed and just go crazy. And the third day, everybody's jumping, or people are jumping in the waterfall, and you're like, wow, okay. So tell you guys, we're going to waterfall. So it was such a nice, transition by themselves, like
Beautiful,
just
that's
being
beautiful.
themselves, not doing what I tell them to do. Everybody was really just doing what they needed to do. That's what we forget, I think, a lot, because we are living in this world of expectations and, how we should do ourselves, how we should be. And yeah, I love that. And I love that your journey was always rebellious, right? Like trying different things. It's very connecting very much with me. I still had to go to university because my dad was very kind of, I was like, no, this is not that way. So I had to. But yeah, from the time, I absolutely agree, and I'm so happy that I don't feel weird anymore, because I was always everywhere. I worked for 1.5 year. I had to go. It was just no growth. There was no enough stimulation. There was not enough for for I don't know, just growing, just being an adventure. Yeah, feeling adventure. So yeah, I get really fast bored. But I realized actually something. There is something that I found out this weekend, or like a few weeks ago. I started to look at limiting beliefs, and this is for someone as well, probably very similar to us, that there is a reason that sometimes we get very fast bored. And I realized that limiting belief, I'm not enough, or I don't have capacity. It was so interesting because I was looking at behaviors and how we look for confirmation of limiting beliefs. And it's basically you get bored very quickly, or you start to do something else because that's more exciting. That is confirmation of, you didn't finish this because you don't have capacity. So I was like, wow, because that was a big part of my life. Like I was always doing something more and different, trying different things because I love it. But I told myself because I love it, but maybe there was the part of me. You somewhere you believe maybe you don't have capacity to do this. You don't have capacity to be this person. And it was interesting realization how limits can play,
We're very clever at justifying, why we do something to avoid the truth of the limitations or the limiting self-beliefs, or, for the ego to become undone in any way. Our ego, our sense of identity is so quick like a fox to be able to, justify and create stories around, its own self-justification, defending itself, like no, I'm doing this because da, 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 da,
Yeah, absolutely. I always said when you justify, that's the ego, that's not you. It's not at all, right? Just your soul doesn't need to justify anything.
No, nothing to justify or defend, you know. And 99% of the time that the ego is, you know, frantically trying to survive and protect itself, it's not real death. It's just perceived threat. It's not an actual real threat, you know. I have this lovely thing since you know, in the last 12 years of this these practices, I have this lovely conversation with my ego. And my ego is, to me, my ego is like this. Sometimes when the ego is getting all impetuous and you know, all righteous, I see my ego as like this 13-year-old boy, you know, this impetuous teenage boy going, I want to do this. No, I'm justifying why, and blah, blah, blah. I'm getting all defensive and reactionary, right? And then I see my soul, if quote unquote soul, call it whatever you want, my consciousness, right? As this wise old woman. I don't know why I see her as a woman. It's just I do. She's a feminine, wise, strong, beautiful Mother Earth woman part of me, right? And when my ego is having a little tantrum, this wise soul woman comes in and kind of swoops him up and says, "Oh, bless you, cotton socks. You know, look at you go, ego. I know you're trying to keep us safe, but look, there's no lion coming to eat us, honey. We're okay. We're not actually in danger. It's all good. You can loosen your grip now on the way you think things should be and why you're trying to prove your point. You can just relax. It's all good." And the ego just kind of goes, "Oh, busted. Okay, I'll just relax now." And I don't know. It's a funny way of having a self-awareness check-in.
Good relationships as well with ego, right? And that heart center, I guess it's nice to put it into self kind of story of two people.
Story and character and archetype and it's just a nice way of having an internal dialogue that's functional and helpful because we're developing the ability to pause in a moment, not react, which is what the ego's desperately trying to do, but just to pause, take a breath, and become aware of options in terms of how I'm going to respond or not. And this is one of the best practices is pausing. And pausing in conversation, but also pausing just throughout your day to day. This has been one of my favorite habits to create since 2014. I've been creating this habit. If I could flip my screen around, you'd see on my computer screen behind you, I've got a big word pause. And on my door over there, I have the word pause. And so creating pause moments is literally just earmarking parts throughout the day where you finish doing something, you're about to go do something else, but rather than just going from thing to thing to thing to thing, just pause,
I just, yeah,
take a
right.
breath, maybe take three breaths, just notice what you can notice, and then continue. And these pause moments create these little micro recalibrations back to your place of equanimity, your calm center. And it's such a high functioning thing to do because you keep coming back to your center, your calm. Which makes you a better person in each moment for the people that you're with as well. So,
I agree. Yeah. And it's beautiful because that was very big realization for me as well when I was looking through things and I realized there are people that are very excited. Like I'm always excited about life and new things and everything what is happening in the world. And it was interesting to look at that from perspective, hey, but maybe that excitement is actually ego. So, you know, people usually think that, you know, the ego is pushing you and creates this negative tension, you know, like the psychological tension. And it's a fear and guilt and shame and, you know, like the high pressure stress. And I was looking at it, I was like, no, actually excitement is just my ego doing. And I realized because, you know, it keeps you away from doing the right decisions because it floods you with these beautiful hormones of excitement, love, and, you know, like you are high. So how you can make decisions on high, right? So I was looking at that and I realized that was based on all the journey of, you know, excitement and ego, like, hey, I'm important, I'm this, I'm the, you know, it's really pushing us, right? Like something great happens, so we are so excited. And when I drop back into that, you know, taking space and pause and being in stillness, I'm not excited. I realize actually I just love. I just love. And love has really calm energy, not excitement. So it was interesting to calm down the ego and just let's say, don't be excited about you are being excited. Nothing to be thrilled about, right?
I
Like,
think we're born with, a natural behavioral style or styles or combinations of natural behavioral styles. Some people are naturally more extrovert, some people are naturally more introvert, the whole DISC thing and also our natural core values, which we are born with a predisposition, and then also we learn through our environment. And the research, actually the latest research is suggesting that the nurture nature ratio is about 50-50. That's what they're thinking. And so our ego develops as we're growing up, and then and sometimes adjusts and it does catch up. So if you're naturally excitable and adventurous, and you've got a lot of eye showing up on your DISC style, and that's just
You
naturally who
can
you are,
tell.
then your ego will identify as that because this is who I am, right? And that's fine. Our sense of identity is not, like you said, our sense of identity is not necessarily negative. Our ego is not necessarily a bad thing. It can be a beautiful, healthy ego as well. And when we can re-identify. I've had a couple of identity crises through my life where I've really lost, I lost connection to who I was. And you don't actually die. It's really just an opportunity to reinvent yourself, which is a beautiful opportunity. It was really scary the first time in my 20s, but then in my early 40s, it was an opportunity. But we can have a healthy sense of ego. And, one of my affirmations is my I am statement, which is simply saying I am, and then inserting your core values, and then person. Or for me, I say man. So my I am statement is I am a kind, caring, generous, loving, open-minded, action-taking man. And I say it out loud a lot, right? And because I've been wiring that over the last 10, 12 years, I've been saying that, and I've changed the words sometimes when I feel to. But because I've been saying it so much, my ego has caught up to that. So my sense of identity, that's how I identify now. Now I brainwashed myself into that with repetition, right? And now my sense of identity is that. So that's how I show up. At least that's how I aspire to show up. But my default is kind. My default is loving. My default is these things now because I wired it that way. So we can be conscious about creating an ego, a sense of identity that is not only functional in terms of the way we are in relationship with ourselves and others, but also that's robust. It's a strong foundation rather than identifying as someone's husband or wife, or identifying as a coach, or identifying as a corporate leader, or identifying as a tennis player, or all these vehicles we identify with, which can be taken away from us. When we identify with the quality of our character and our values, that can't ever be taken away from you. No one can ever stop you from being kind.
I love that. I love that. That's such a beautiful reminder. And that's when people think that, when I don't have this, I'm losing identity, right? If I don't have this and I don't do this, I'm a different person. But you're not. And coming back to that's the journey. I see, like, that's the journey coming back to yourself, right? Like, you're coming back to your values. You're revisiting actually what you truly love in your life. And that's why I love this work so much. So I'm sure you do that also on your retreat. We did a lot of, like, a deep dive into values and beliefs, and really understanding who we are without the job, who we are without this money, and I guess business or whatever we do, right? So who we are, because it's not doing that is identifying us. I love that, and it's more about who you are becoming, who you want to become, who you want to be. So yeah, that's magical. That's definitely magical. And I think, sorry, go.
No, you said something earlier as well, which, and then you've just reminded me of what you said earlier. When everyone jumped into the waterfall at your retreat, then it's a, like a leveler. Everyone's just another person. There's no hierarchy, or I'm more successful than you or not. There's no comparison. And it's the same when we
I
run our
think.
Himalayan retreat, when we're trekking remote Himalaya, and we walk for 7 days, and there's no connection, and it's uncomfortable, and we're at high altitude, and when
That's
you're
hard.
walking up a really steep hill with not much oxygen, and you are gasping for breath, and you're sweating, And then we finally get to the campsite for the night and we all collapse relieved. And then we set up our tents and make a fire.
Wow.
Everyone is just as equal as each other. Everyone struggled to get up that hill. Everyone got there in the end. Everyone helps each other put their tents up and build a fire. And it, no one is a CEO or a
Yep.
manager, or no one's any of those roles that we play. We're just the raw essence of who we are. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. So I see it as a when people drop into emotions, because we connecting through emotions, we connecting as a soul, we connecting through similar, experiences. So when we actually experience the same thing, that can be struggle, or physical exhaustion or anything what we feel. Actually, that was I don't know if that was John DeMartini or someone that was talking about that it's the best way actually to connect with people. So actually when you're going on date, he was mentioning, I honestly can't remember, was that maybe Jordan Peterson, but please don't take this because I don't know. But I remember he was mentioning about, when you're going on date and you want to have really good quality date, the best way how to create a connection and great experience for both people is to go somewhere where you will have new experience, but of course the person needs to be the same and open into same experience. So you don't take someone to jump from the plane when you are not scared and the person is scared. So you try to match the experience, the emotions, and yeah, that's the best and strongest connections people create, because
I
they
love it.
find a way and they trust each other and they share the experience. So yeah, it's amazing.
I love it. I always have felt that any
Oh,
friendship that I've had,
sorry.
it's okay. Any friendship that I've had goes to a whole other level when you meet each other in a different part of the world. So if we've first become friends in Australia and then we both happened to be in Venice at the same time and we met up for lunch in Venice, the relationship gets this whole other level of dimension to it
I
because
love
we've
it.
connected on a different geographical part of this little planet that we're all
It's
on,
beautiful.
right? I love that. And that Talia, my partner Talia and I love traveling and we love traveling together. We just travel so easily together. It's just ease and flow. And when we travel together, everything flows. And that's a manifestation of ours. And we also plan and prepare as much, but we don't hold on too tightly. We love it when, unexpected things happen, and that's part of the ease and the flow. But we love going to new places together. We just it's it's what you're saying, it's that beautiful connection piece of two humans experiencing something for the first time together.
And I love it. So look, I will have to jump off the call soon. So what I will do, I will firstly, of course, ask you to share where people can find you. But I would love to continue this conversation, because I think the ego, the beliefs, the values, and the journey, I think there is so much more we can uncover and we can talk about.
Yeah, sure.
So anytime you will be able to jump on call and we can continue, maybe, more dive deeper into ego and all these behaviors and attitudes and experiences we have and what can help us. I think that will be amazing. I believe everybody.
Yeah, I'd love to. Let's jump on another call in January.
And awesome. That will be great. So yeah, where people can, or how people can connect with you, Jem.
Everywhere that you type in my name, Jem with a J, JEMFULLER, Jem Fuller. So if you type that into LinkedIn or to Instagram or Facebook or any of those, I'm not on, I still call it Twitter. I haven't been on Twitter since it turned into X. I'm not there because I think it's a toxic place to hang out. But I'm everywhere else as Jem Fuller. And jemfuller.com is where you can get access to all of my resources. I've got free ebooks, I've got books, I've got courses. You can contact me there. And the thing that I'm most excited about now is the next level of our experience, the path to inner peace, meaning on the mountain. And that is meaning on the mountain, meaning as in meaning of life, not meeting. Meaningonthemountain.com.au. Go and check that out. And look, I'm really accessible. Reach out to me through the contact form on my website. If you contact me, I promise you I'll get back in touch with you. So yeah, I'm open to having chats with people who are positive and optimistic and curious about how they can expand into their potential.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love it. And what I will do, I will share the links and contact details and everything so people can go to description of this podcast and find you there as well. So easy way to connect. Thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate your time. I know we went for I think hour, but let's do it again because I think there is so much more to unpack. Really love your journey and definitely would love to know more about your adventures and experience. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Alex. I really appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you.
Thank you.